Good morning, members. There are donuts from Emily's Bakery in Hastings there. We're not on, but we're gonna take a deep breath.
Mine's on.
Ms. Stipko, I believe we're actually are on. Yeah. She's usually never wrong. Members, we're going to hear today issues about the DNR's game and fish bill. We're going to specifically center in, I believe, entirely on the wolf. The gray wolf is in the midst of being delisted. This is a terrific opportunity in Minnesota for us to bring control of this magnificent animal back in control of the state of Minnesota. And so we want to make sure that we're crossing our T's and dotting our I's as we go forward here. We are going to hear first from the DNR, just a quick preview of what's before us. And then Dr. Meech is here, probably one of the most renowned people in regards to the gray wolf. And we're so lucky that he is available, but only until a little before 9 o'clock. He's got to get out of town. So the DNR will set it up. If Representative Deal, who is here then, after the DNR presents just a quick overview, Representative Deal will highlight how his bill is different than the DNR's proposal, and then we'll move into Dr. Meech's thoughts and questions for Dr. Meech. And then we will not be moving the bill today. We don't even have a bill number for the DNR. We do have a bill number for Representative Deal, but we'll hold it over for possible inclusion or to move it at a later date. So there will be another opportunity, but we really want to hear from folks today. So if you're not on the list of speakers and you're interested in speaking, I believe Ms. Zipko has put a list that's up at the on the shelf there, or slip a note to the page and we'll make sure, because we want to give people an opportunity to speak today. Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we are beginning this new season, do you have for us a short preview of what our schedule is for this spring, or this late winter and spring, and specifically when we're going to be hearing bonding proposals?
Representative Lagunias, and to the members and to the audience, we are waiting to hear exactly when we will hear. I do anticipate we will hear bonding proposals. It's my hope that we will have an idea of how much money we should be allocating from this committee. I'd really rather not do the deal where we just hear them and pretend we send them all to some dark room and then they decide what to do. I'd like us to have serious input on what we feel should be included, and we're waiting still from leadership to get more direction on that. It's my hope that we would be hearing those fairly soon, but I don't know exactly what the timing is going to be. Representative Wagini.
Other issues?
Other issues. We will have the Lasard Sand Outdoor Heritage Council bill. We will have the CARP issue, AIS. But most importantly, we're going to discuss in this committee, no different than they're going to do in the entire legislature, ways that we can make this state more productive, move forward, streamline permitting, to follow up on Representative Fabian's House File 1. What can we do for job providers, for folks that want to work in this state, to move forward and get an opportunity to work here, and for job providers to provide that. So we will have important discussion along those lines, and that will be the most important thing we do. And when those issues become before us, we will move on those in an appropriate manner. And we look forward to working with both sides of the aisle and the governor's office on a number of these things. All the goodwill and such that's gone over for the last few hours in this body, I hope can continue for the next weeks and short months. Representative Lagunias, Representative Hans.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe for a future meeting, if we could get information on the various fund balances that are before us, perhaps the Game and Fish Fund balance, how much is left of the AIS appropriation that was passed last year, how much is on the table for the Water Legacy Fund, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and in the LCCMR, I think would be useful for a future meeting if that's possible.
Good point. Mr. Bogus, Mr. Stark, whoever you would think. Any other members have any questions? Representative Hansen, were you done?
Well, Mr. Chair, it would be interesting to hear on the job component of what's before us today.
The job component? There's a half a dozen, if I'm not mistaken, federal trappers that are packing their bags and headed to Idaho, Wyoming, and people that live in Representative Hancock, Representative Fabian's district are wondering how their cattle are going to be protected, and that's what these guys are here to talk about today. And I know there's a number of folks concerned about the implications with wolves, deer, and are wondering where we're at. So there is a job component. We have 500,000 deer hunters that are wondering. Mr. Bogus, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ed Bogus, Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources. I have with me Dan Stark, who is our wolf and large carnivore specialist for the Department of Natural Resources from Grand Rapids. In the interest of time, we're going to work pretty quickly, just spend about 5 minutes going through this two-sided handout that you should all have a copy of that talks about our approach to the wolf season. We're recommending a measured, kind of cautious approach, especially this first season, so that we can learn from that season and use that information to adapt our seasons in the future that would be designed more to accomplish specific management objectives. This first season is really more of a season to collect information to determine hunter interest, trapper interest, success rates, and things like that. One of the reasons for that, and Mr. Stark will get into this in a little more detail, is that the department has never managed a wolf season in Minnesota. Wolves were an unprotected species from, you know, statehood until the Endangered Species Act put them under total protection. It was like a switch was thrown in the summer of 1974, and they went from a completely unprotected species to a completely protected species, and there was no managed season in between with licenses or management zones or quotas or anything like that. So we need to take our time to do this right. Wolves are a very resilient species and can withstand a high rate of take or human-caused mortality, but we want to do this right. We want to do it in a stepwise fashion, and we know there's a lot of pent-up enthusiasm for a wolf season. It's been a long time since there's been one in Minnesota, but we want to do it right, and it'll probably require at least a year or two of offering different options and figuring out how hunters and trappers react to those and how successful they are in implementing those. So with that, I'm going to ask Mr. Stark to quickly just walk you through what's in this handout. We'll be back later, I understand, in the hearing if there's questions, so we'll just quickly summarize this. So,
Dan. Okay, Mr. Stark, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Dan Stark. I'm the large carnivore specialist for DNR. Basically, just to outline this proposal or recommendation for a wolf season for this fall 2012, the season would occur late November through early January, similar to our bobcat season. It coincides when pelt conditions are at the peak primeness. We would close the season when we reach the quota number, if we would reach that before the end date. A statewide season, wolves would primarily be taken in areas in the northern part of the state in our wolf range, obviously. But we aren't specifying any specific management units. Wolves will likely be taken where they're more accessible or visible, where people have better access. A quota of 400 wolves. That would be a limit of one per hunter or trapper and about 6,000 licenses. So the methods of take would be hunting, current big game firearms, the current allowance for firearms that we allow for big game would be also consistent with what people could use for wolves, archery or muzzleloader. Calls and bait would be allowed with some restrictions, and we wouldn't allow people to pursue wolves with dogs. And then trapping, foothold traps would be allowed. Current trap restrictions would be adequate to use the appropriate size trap for trapping a wolf. And then snares also, but we would need to modify some of the current regulations for allowing people that have a wolf license while attempting to take a wolf during a wolf season be able to set snares that could catch a wolf. So the first year, there's really no specific management objective. It's an inaugural wolf season to gauge hunter and trapper interest, evaluate success rates, and collect data on the demographics of the wolf population. We feel there's some critical elements that need to be included in this. It would be a conservative first-year quota, one that we could evaluate for future seasons. Limit the number of hunters so that we can gauge the hunter interest and success rates. A same-day registration system so that we could track the progress of the season and close the season when it's approaching or reaches that quota. And then mandatory requirement to submit carcasses for data gathering. And then we also have scheduled a wolf population survey like we've done in the past for winter 2012-2013. And then in the future, we expect that this is going to be a progressive approach to developing information that we can incorporate into future planning and more specific objectives that may address some areas of the state that have higher depredation rates, so that we could focus take of wolves in those areas of the state and develop a population model that we can track the harvest each year and have an estimate of the wolf populations.
Thank you, Mr. Stark, and thank you, Mr. Bogus. We'll bring in Dr. Meech first because he does need to leave quickly. As he's approaching, Representative Dill, can you just give us the 30-second difference between your bill and the proposal we just heard from the DNR? Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the bill that I have introduced has the primary difference is that it would allow for non-resident trapping. And First, Mr. Chairman, I put the bill out to kind of throw things against the wall to see what people thought. And, found out, as I suspected, that non-resident trapping wasn't going to be a very happy thing. And, you know, if I were doing an amendment today, a delete all amendment on this, I would be eliminating that. It prescribes fees, which we must do. The DNR does not have the authority to do. And my fees are lower in regards to residents than their fees. And frankly, having looked at their proposal and my proposal, I think that theirs is better when it comes to the fees, the $50 rather than my $38. And the only reason I picked $38 is because of other license costs. And I just think that that's more appropriate. The difference between their proposal and my proposal is that I prescribe that the commissioner shall establish the season on the first day of regular deer firearm season, and they say that they're going to establish it at the beginning of what I believe is the muzzleloader season. I think there's going to be a great backlash of people opposed to starting this at the muzzleloading season, particularly in these earlier years. There is a great pent-up demand to do this. Would be similar to the start of the pheasant hunting season in South Dakota if they hadn't been one since 1974. People would be wanting to get a license and get out there and get going. It also, I believe, having not discussed it a lot with the DNR, would put hunters that are hunting deer with a muzzleloader out into the stand with two types of firearms, a high-powered rifle to take a wolf and a muzzleloader to take a deer. That's something that I think we should discuss. My bill does not have expedited rulemaking process authority in it, but if I had a delete all today, I would put expedited rulemaking so that we could actually get this thing done. I don't believe that materially would diminish the public's ability to react to to a bill that we had before us or to have public comment in the expedited rulemaking process, because this is a front and center issue. One of the higher profile issues that I've ever put a bill in on. Kind of reminds me of charter school. We go to a charter school meeting in my district, and all they want to talk about is how are their kids going to play sports. And, you know, this is something that I've got a lot of email on. Those are kind of the basic differences. Honestly, I don't think that the DNR is far off on their proposal. You know, in the bill, in my bill, it talks about...
Representative Dill, that statement is on the tape.
I know. It tasted a little like poison coming off my mouth, honestly.
Well, thank you, Representative Dill. Thanks for your comment.
Well, I had one more.
Yeah, go ahead. Last one.
Okay, the quota. I think that we're a little low on the quota, but I think it's pretty good on the number of hunters. The 400 and the 6,000, it would seem to me that we could be a little more generous on the numbers. Let me say one thing about that. These easy ones are going to be easy to get, the easy wolves. And then they're going to get smart. Imagine the first day of pheasant hunting season in South Dakota or Minnesota, and that first shot goes off in the first section, and all those roosters that made it through the winter go, oh my God, not this again. They're going to remember all the way back to 1973 when they were getting chased by airplanes and snowmobiles and everything else. So I think we can be a little more liberal on the numbers and get started earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Dr. Meech, welcome, and if you could identify yourself for the records, and if we could hear from you, we're very thankful that you're able to attend. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Meech, and I'm a senior research scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey and an adjunct professor at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here to answer your questions.
Would you care to make some preliminary remarks, given the presentation that's occurred so far?
Well, I am, of course, aware of the DNR's plan, proposed plan, and I really think it's extremely well thought out, and I think it's an excellent approach to beginning wolf management in the state here by the DNR. It is conservative, we all know that, but that's deliberate because of the controversial nature of the wolf. We got a lot of people who don't think any wolf should ever be allowed to live, and we got a lot of people that think no wolf should ever be killed. And so the DNR is in a position of trying to meet the expectations of not only those groups but the general public. And I think an approach like this is, like theirs, would really serve extremely well in trying to meet that very sensitive line that they're trying to meet.
Thank you, Dr. Meech. If I can ask, I remember since I was a kid. You working on timber wolf issues. Can you just real quickly tell the committee what's your experience? Why should we care what you say about timber wolves? Who are you? What have you done for the last four decades?
It turns out it's been my career, my entire career, to be working with wolves, studying them. So I've studied them for about 53 years now. Yeah, I know a little bit about them.
Okay, and thank you, Dr. Meech. Dr. Meech, what are your thoughts about how hunters will succeed in the taking of a wolf, how successful will they be going out in the woods, and how about how successful trappers would be, and what would be some of the different methods you could envision that would increase the success? And I mean, truthfully, Representative Dill talked about in the days back, I remember as a kid, folks hunting out of airplanes to shoot red fox. It was very common in where I grew up, and I actually grew up in the Seven County metropolitan area where they did that. They also did that on timber wolves years ago. That's one end of the range. The other end of the range would be trying to attract them with just out of a tree stand with no bait or whatever. What do you see all the different ways that could potentially be used, and what are your thoughts?
Well, there's many different ways, but as the DNR has already mentioned, hunting and or trapping and snaring would be the most effective. it's difficult to hunt bulls, not impossible, and I'm sure that there will be some people who will learn how to do it. We already have some coyote hunters, for example, and they can adapt their methods to taking wolves, but there's quite a difference in that, you know, you go out in coyote range and you're probably never more than a quarter mile or a half mile from a coyote. You go out in wolf range, the average density of wolves in Minnesota, and this is a overall density, is something like 1 per 10 square miles. Just think of that a minute. So you go out and try to, say, call a wolf, similar to calling a coyote, and you, first of all, you got to find, you know, where that animal is. With coyotes, you know they're going to be around somewhere. With wolves, you got to find out where they are. But 1 per 10 square miles is not really the correct way to look at it, because as everybody knows, wolves live in packs, and if you look at the density of packs, say there's say an average 6 to 8 wolves per pack, then you're going to be looking at trying to find a pack. This would be in the middle of winter, say, or late fall, and you've got 1 pack per 60 to 80 square miles. So now you go out there and try to call them. Well, you got to get close to them first to do that. So, you know, it's difficult deliberately trying to hunt them, though there will be some folks who succeed that way. Most wolves, and the DNR has already mentioned this, most wolves would be taken if you had a season during, if, for example, if it was allowed to take wolves during the hunting season, the deer hunting season, by anybody with a license, there'd be more wolves killed that way, depending on how many folks have licenses, just simply because of the total number of people you have out there. If you have 200, 300, 400, 500,000 people hunting deer, a certain number of those are going to see them. The chances of any individual seeing one and getting close enough to shoot it and all that is very low, but when you put hundreds of thousands of hunters out there, there will be some who are in that position. But that's where I think the DNR's plan is so well thought out. They need, for the first year, and I'm sympathetic to this, that the plan be conservative so that they can gather information about just how many people will take wolves and how much motivation is there. It's easy to sit here and say, oh, I'd love to go out and kill a wolf, but you know, it's not that easy once you get out there. And even hunting, trapping and snaring requires you to go out every day and check your traps or snares. You got to contend with the weather, freezing traps, and snowfall that ruins your sets and all. And you have to be pretty persistent and really highly motivated to go out and get many of these. I think the first year or the first couple of years, there will be a certain number of people who want to hang a wolf rug on the wall. But after you get that first wolf rug, I mean, how many more you really want to put on your wall? And you know, you can sell them for maybe a pelt would be worth, I don't know now, $100 or so, something like that. That's going to be a lot of work to get $100. So I think after the novelty of the first season or second season wears off, there aren't going to be that many people who really want to persist enough to get very many wolves.
Dr. Meech, if I can follow up, many of us think that in some cases there's too many wolves in certain spots, and so the opportunity for incidental take by deer hunters may be one way to help with that population. But there's substantially less deer hunters in the woods, say the third weekend in Representative Dill's district or Representative Fabian's district. We know how many deer are taken on those days by the hunters. At some point we may or we will have the discussion, would that be some valuable information to us to know if we have this many deer hunters actually in the woods, which would be way smaller than, say, a proposal to have it on the opening of deer season? Would that give us some good information going forward to evaluate, well, there was, because we know how many deer get taken on the last weekend as opposed to the first, and it's completely different. And I think you said, or Representative Dill said, I guess it was, when the first shot is fired, wolves are, they're an unbelievable trophy and an extreme, I got to believe, the smartest animal that we have in the woods today. They're going to be really tough to get. Wouldn't there be some value in allowing the regular firearm season towards the end an opportunity for some of those hunters, maybe even it's just in a limited area or whatever, to give us some good information as to success so we can begin to look at if we have to expand that to get the better control on the number of wolves?
Well, the trouble with that is you can't control it. In other words, it's totally out of your control as to how many wolves might be taken on that day. It's a guess. And it might be high, it might be low. I couldn't tell you. So given that, if it ended up, that you took more than anyone would guess you might take, then all of a sudden you've got a PR problem. The DNR is, allowing us to wipe out the wolves. And I think that's what they're trying to avoid. As you know, the wolves have been delisted a few times and have been put back on the list as a result of lawsuits. And there could be one tomorrow. We really don't know. But I would say the more, the larger the number of wolves taken during the first season, the greater your chances that that's going to happen. And that could stall the whole wolf management, DNR wolf management, Minnesota wolf management, for years.
Thank you.
So I think that's what we're up against here, really.
Well, that's why we have you here. We wanted to hear so all your time. We know that the information is very valuable. Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Meech, I assume that you're familiar with the public hunting of wolves in Canada. Could you describe the impact of the Canadian wolf hunt on the population of wolves in Canada?
Dr. Meech.
Yes, the Canada has 50 to 60,000 wolves, and the harvest of them is very, very light relative to the total population. So there really is no effect, no biological effect or no population effect on on the wolves taken by, in many places, in Alberta, they're poison, for example. When you have that large number in that large area, as you have in Canada, and relatively few people who are taking them, the human harvest is essentially inconsequential.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. And just to follow up then, how about success rates for those that actively go out to try and take a wolf? Any idea how successful wolf hunters are in Canada?
I haven't followed it in Canada, but Idaho and Montana, of course, we all know it's been very, very low. The hunter success rate, other than during the elk season when they, there's a lot of hunters out there, but most of them, I think 70-some percent in Montana were taken during the elk season, incidental to taking elk. That is, people weren't out there trying to get wolves, but again, you put a large number of hunters in the woods, and sooner or later, one of them's going to see a wolf close enough to shoot it. But no, they're having a lot of trouble. I'm a little amused about it because I've had debts with my colleagues out there as to how they're going to do in harvesting wolves, and it's fun to watch that they keep extending the season because they don't get enough in the seasons that they first prescribed. But again, and we might learn from this, the DNRs out there, Fish and Game Commission and all, they've been conservative as well. So they set their seasons very conservatively for the same reason that DNR is planning it here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Meech, thank you for being here. I live in Roseville, Minnesota, which is, there's obviously a large population of wolves in my area. The number that I've heard the DNR use with regards to the target population for the state of Minnesota is between 15 and 1,600. Is that accurate, Mr. Bogus? I'm sorry.
1,600 is our minimum.
Right, okay.
Mr. Bogus mentioned 1,600.
Yep, I just wanted to make sure on that. Do you support that? Dr. Meech?
Yeah, as a minimum number?
Dr.
Yes.
Meech.
Yes.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, how long, Dr. Meech, do you think it should take us to get to that level, if that's what we want to get to someday?
Representative Fabian, are you asking Dr. Meech?
Yes,
if he
I am.
Thinks we should go down to that level?
Yes.
Dr. Meech.
Well, I'm not certain the plan is to go down to that level. As I understand it, that would be the minimum level that they would allow the population to drop to. I don't think it's a target level. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the level at which the federal government would step in and say, "Hey, you know, you got too few this population. We might have to put it back on the list."
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then you've seen the numbers that the DNR has with regards to the wolf population as they think it exists in the state. Are your numbers that you have consistent with theirs?
Absolutely.
Dr.
Yes.
Meek.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Meech, thank you for your career in public service. Well, many of us have seen your name over the years and read the articles and dedicating a career to help us as policymakers get data and make decisions is very helpful. So thank you for your work. Mr. Chair, my question is kind of on the research, what's happened in other states and where the science is on this interaction with domestic livestock and what happens now with the seasons if the federal program goes away. We have a compensation program through the state. So removing the federal sharpshooters, having the take by the landowners, in addition to the season. We've talked a lot about the season here, but what do you see has happened in other states? Is there a similar effects when this happens, and what are some expectations that we should have related to that issue with farming and livestock?
Dr. Meech.
Yes, it is a serious issue that the budget for wildlife services has been cut. And, you know, this is an unknown for us because wildlife services has been in operation. In fact, I used to run it from 1975 to 78 that I started that program. And it's been very effective minimizing depredations on livestock. We'd love to see it continue. If it doesn't continue, then although it's wonderful to let, I think that it is quite worthwhile to let landowners protect their own property, it's going to be very difficult for them to do that because, you know, they can shoot a wolf if it's on their land or if it's killing their livestock or whatever in certain areas, but they're not going to be out there all the time to see that, and very few wolves will be killed under that provision. And if Wildlife Services does not stay involved in that program or in that issue, then I think the state it behooves the state to concentrate and focus its taking seasons and areas in the areas that have the maximum amount of conflict, wolves and livestock. And that's going to be the best way, I think, to handle it if Wildlife Services can't, or if some similar program can't. Now, the DNR Wolf Management Plan does allow for a directed predator control program where certain individuals are certified to, these would be trackers basically, certified to go into the area of the farm where the depredations are occurring and try to get those wolves. And they would be paid a certain amount for each wolf killed, that kind of thing. That work, in fact, that was the program before the wolf went on the endangered species list. In the early 70s, that program was worked fairly well. But whether it would work now, 35 years later, you know, in those days, in the early 70s, we had a fair number of trappers, local trappers, who were practiced at taking wolves and had the time and made the effort to get them. Whether that would be true now, it's hard to say. But it's a good, I think that plan is a good one, if it ends up working. But again, we won't know until it's tried, really.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so for long-term protection of the wolf in Minnesota, we'll still have to be dealing with conflict wolves, trying to reduce the conflict with livestock or pets or whatever.
That's true all over wolf range. I mean, wherever wolves live around livestock, that's always going to be the case.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Meech, I'm curious as to in our northern borders there with Canada, the extent to which wolves cross back and forth in the large population in Canada and relative to the population of wolves in Minnesota. Is there an expectation there that we can really make a dent on depredation given that exchange? Is that a real thing?
That is Dr. a real Mead. Thing, and wolves are great dispersers. Many of you may know this wolf that has a GPS collar on it and is being tracked by satellites that went from northeastern Oregon into northern California. And there's other examples, many examples of that. So wolves do disperse long distances. I don't think we're ever going to end livestock depredations by wolves on livestock in Minnesota or anywhere else. I don't think it's without extreme measures that it'll ever end.
Dr. Meech, I have a question. In my experience in deer hunting up near Ely in the Tower area, generally speaking, one of the three weekends of the deer season will have the presence of wolves in the area, generally speaking. If you hear the pack howling on opening weekend, I don't know that I've ever heard them again then the second or third weekend. Right. I believe this year was the first time I never heard the howling, though I did see a track on the last weekend, so they certainly were present there. There was fresh timberwolf track. How does a pack work as it travels around? Evidently, they travel. You mentioned that. And then what would a hypothetical pack of 8 to 10 wolves in a given year, what would their diet be, say, in the forested area where we have coyote, white-tailed deer, moose, and such? How do they work, if you can give us just in couple minutes how that works? Dr. Mead.
Like an average wolf pack will travel, 13, 14, 15 miles in a day. And that's not a straight line distance because they're constrained by their territories. Each pack has its own territory, which, as I say, can be anywhere from 25 square miles up in Minnesota, 25 square miles up to 100 square miles for one pack. And they circulate around that. This would be in winter. I mean, in the spring, they have a den of pups, and they radiate out from where that den is and come back and feed the pups. But in fall and winter, those pups are grown large enough so that they are nomadic with the pack. And that pack drifts around its territory, like I say, 15 miles a day or so, sometimes 20 more. And they're looking for prey, and they need to travel far and wide to find the right kind of prey that they can catch and kill. And that's why they have to travel so far. So in the process, I mean, you might hear, they might be near you first day of hunting season, and then the next day, or they could be 10 miles away very easily, and probably would be. So they do this, and then most of the wolves in Minnesota are feeding on deer. There are some that take moose. Those are mainly in, where the moose are, in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area region. But most of the wolves in Minnesota are taking deer. They'll eat just about anything, including garbage. But 90-some percent of the diet of wolves in Minnesota would be white-tailed deer.
And Dr. Meech, a follow-up. A typical pack would eat how many deer in a given year?
Oh, on the average, about 18, or each wolf about 18. The equivalent of about 18 adult-sized deer a year. And I say adult-sized because you have to factor in, if they're killing fawns in the summer, which is primarily what they take in the summer, very rarely taking an adult deer in the summer, then it would be a lot more fawns. But it's the equivalent of about 18 adult-sized deer a year for each wolf.
And how many of those deer would you say are feeble or hurting in some other way that they could be going to die shortly thereafter? Is that their natural prey? Or are they in deep snow? Can they take down the healthiest of deer?
Well, we've got a lot of good figures on all that, and I can tell you, even though, when you find a wolf-killed deer in the woods, it might be a huge buck or it might be a very healthy-looking animal. But let's face it, none of us can really look at that animal and tell how healthy it is. I could spend hours on this subject, But I try to be succinct here. Our figures show, and many others do, that most of the deer that are killed by wolves are in some way, they're either old or they have some abnormality. If you take blood samples, like we radioed hundreds of deer, and when we catch a deer and put a radio on, we take a blood sample from it. If you look at the blood of the deer that are then killed by wolves, that has some deviant blood values. I've watched a wolf or a deer stand off three wolves, just stand there and fight off three wolves, and the wolves couldn't touch it. That's just an example of how hard it is for a wolf to kill a deer. And that's, in fact, explains why they have to travel so far and wide around their range to finally find a deer that is vulnerable enough for them to kill it. So what I'm getting at is that the deer that the wolves kill tend to be deer that are either much older than the average in the population or that are deficient in some way enough so that the wolf can catch it. Wolves have been killed by deer in Minnesota. I've got a skull of a wolf that had its head dented in, was killed by the sharp hoof of a deer. We've also seen where antlered deer have stuck wolves in the chest with their antlers and killed them. So it's dangerous for a wolf to try to tackle a deer, and they have to find the right ones that they can catch and kill without themselves being jeopardized. So even though you go out and you see this dead deer and it looks perfectly healthy, I don't know how many times people have told me this, it was perfectly healthy. Well, you know, you just can't look at a dead animal and say it was perfectly healthy.
Well, thank you, and I know we're approaching the time that you need to leave, and I only have one more question, so we'll take Representative Qualm's question, and then unless anybody has a real pressing one, we'll allow you to catch your flight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Mead, I'd like your general opinion on any rules. My fear is that you might get a group of people together hunting and severely damage a pack, as opposed to taking out a member or two when the pack survives. Are there any general opinions that you have on rulemaking?
Dr. Meek.
I'm not sure I understand your question. It has to do with taking members of a pack rather than specific individuals, or?
Well, Representative Palm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm familiar with deer hunting, of where you get groups of hunters, sometimes you drive areas, and that if you coordinated with a group of hunters on wolves, that you could take down the viability of a pack. And I didn't know if there were any specific rules that have been suggested or implemented in other states.
No, I don't think there have been. That would be possible, be very, very difficult, and I don't think very effective. But it wouldn't make much difference. I mean, if you took a whole pack, that's not a bad deal, because there's others to fill in and all. So, but I don't think any state has, that I know of, has any rules about that.
Thank you. And Dr. Meech, just in full disclosure, the DNR is not talking about hunting with airplanes again or anything like that. That would be a different scenario where you could, effective in snow conditions and such, do things that could harm the population.
It would, but there's a federal law against that. It wouldn't be possible to do.
Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the sake of having Dr. Meech here, I've got a quick question. With the, you've probably seen the trailers for the movie The Gray, that kind of paints a pack of wolves in a threatening manner. Is the fear of wolves even rational? I mean, from a human perspective.
Dr. Meech.
Well, that's a tough one. Until about 7 or 8 years ago, we would be able to tell you that there's no documented cases of wolves killing anyone in North America. That doesn't mean people won't be afraid of them. They are large carnivores. But there have been two humans killed by wolves in North America in the last 7 or 8 years. And there are children killed by wolves in India. There are several every year. But to put that in perspective, some 20 years ago, the Forest Service had recorded 19 million visitor days in the Superior National Forest, where there's always been wolves. They've never been wiped out of there without any incident of wolves attacking or killing people. 19 million visitor days, and that was 20 years ago. I haven't kept track since. But so that's a perspective. I mean, black bears kill people too, you know, every now and then. So basically, no, I don't think that it's... well, is it? I think your question was, is it rational to be afraid of wolves? Well, yes. I think it would be. One has to be wary of any large carnivore and all. There are certain situations where, if you're walking your dog out in the woods in wolf country, you might lure wolves in, and you might be in a ticklish situation. But generally, I mean, look at all the people who interact with wolves throughout Alaska and Canada and now through and for so long in Minnesota without a real serious incident. So it's like with any other large carnivore, you be careful, but I wouldn't myself be afraid to go out and camp in the woods with wolves around, anything like that.
Representative Dill, last question.
Thank you, Doctor, and for coming in. I live up at Crane Lake, and between the Boundary Waters and Voyageurs, you know, we have a lot of wolves there. And my question is the fact that Voyageurs 270,000 acres is protected by federal law from all hunting and trapping, and that the Boundary Waters, because of the ability to get into it, except on the very peripheral edges, although it isn't protected from hunting or trapping,
it
effectively makes it no trapping or hunting. So does that, let's say, half of the two-thirds of the Boundary Waters plus the 270 acres in Voyageurs make a refuge that will continually provide a buffer for the wolf hunt, wolf populations?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Dr. Meech.
Yeah, along with the whole Canadian population.
Okay, like,
because north of the border, the... It's wilderness as well. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And Dr. Meech, when you say that, though, we probably should qualify. In Ontario, you can hunt them in a lot more open way, but you speak of it as protection for the wolves. So you're saying because of vast wilderness, taking the population down seriously is very hard within the constraints, as you mentioned, of the federal government not allowing airplanes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Meech, thank you so very much for coming in this morning. We appreciate it. Members, we're going to move. We've got a number of folks. Mr. Clavin from the Cattlemen's Association will go to you next. DNR, we're going to let these testifiers go. We've gotten a good feel from the DNR. Hopefully, if we get through all the testifiers, we'll come back to the DNR for them to go into greater length, and we can ask questions of them, of their bill. But I would like to get through the testifiers. And again, if there's any other testifiers, if they could let the pages know they're interested in testifying. Welcome, folks, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin. Good to be back here in Room 5. I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. We had a one-page sheet that I hope got by email to your committee administrator yesterday. Okay, very good. Just to make a couple of points, our members are very interested in all the aspects of the state wolf management plan. There's often conflicts between cattle and wolves, especially in the spring during calving season when the calves are vulnerable. Probably one of the main take-home points.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I believe this may not be in your packet. It will track it down and get it to members.
Sure.
We do have it. I'm sorry. We do have it. Continue, Mr. Clavin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably the main take-home point of the sheet would be we don't want to get into a situation where we overhunt and wind up back on the federal list. So we would encourage you to follow the state plan as it's outlined as you look at the management. Also let you know that we haven't taken a formal position on the hunting season specifics itself. Our board is still talking about that. They did want me to raise the point about fees and management. Don't know where they are on fees, if you do a license fee and that kind of thing, but we did want to make the point that with the state wolf management plan comes a responsibility for the revenue for the department to be able to do that. And so we've been working with the department on that, and we'll continue to do so. So with that, Mr. Chairman, those are my comments for you.
You could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I would echo some of the comments of Mr. Clavin, but just add a couple other comments. We are in support of a hunting season for gray wolves. You know, we're not experts on the number. The 400 probably seems a little low to us, and I'll come back to that in a minute. The other piece is we would like to see some of the hunting season during the deer hunting season. It makes sense to the farmers that I've talked to at the in the meetings I've been at up in northern Minnesota. The keeping it at 400 and knowing where that's at. The other thing to consider that's also in this bill too, and the language is already in statute, but they're tweaking a little bit. And then what we're concerned about is the trappers that were laid off a couple of weeks ago by the USDA, and try to work with the DNR to what's going to happen between late February when calves start hitting the ground and November. When we have nothing, and we're kind of concerned about that. And so we've been talking with the DNR to have some of these, I guess they're called predator controllers, and find some money for that. But also in the language on page 15 and 16, there's language that also gives the DNR the ability to work with the USDA to have a cooperative agreement. And so we talked to Senator Klobuchar's office this morning that trying to find some more money for Minnesota, at least for this year, as we're trying to figure out what's the right number and what we're going to do. But having the DNR have enough money maybe to have some of those trappers or predator controllers out there that can be effective. Because just because the wolves are delisted and a farmer can shoot it, like you have talked about in this committee, they're hard to find. You know, that a farmer I just worked with, he just had the federal trappers out at his place in November. By the way, in Oglevy, which is just an hour north of here, they trapped 7 wolves off his farm. He never saw them or anything, but they were there. And so those trappers are very helpful. And so that's my thing also, just to urge you to consider as we're going forward, is working on this cooperative agreement and urging the DNR to be involved in that so we have some of those trappers. Finally, I'd mention it's not necessarily the purview of this committee, but the Agriculture Department has a depredation fund, and I believe the money is just about out of the money in the depredation fund this year. And so that's also a concern for us on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Peterson or Mr. Clavin? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Peterson, I think I understand you to say that laying off public employees who, through budget cuts, is going to have a dramatic impact or have an impact on individual farmers and the businesses that they have. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Peterson, just to clarify, these are federal employees that are being transferred to western states to where they're going to do predator control on the timber wolf instead of here in Minnesota. And control is going to come back to Minnesota, and we're actually going to hire some folks to take care of the wolves in Minnesota. The state's going to be hiring some folks. We are not going to abandon your people. And people like the Representative Fabian and I talked to yesterday, who trapped 33 wolves in his area to help with control of cattle. We are going to find a way for him or someone else to help the ranchers and farmers in Minnesota, because he said the ranchers and farmers themselves are not going to be able to control this. What did he say, Representative Fabian? He trapped 33 last year, and he's never shot one in his life. Mm-hmm. And he's as old as I am, so you can imagine how long he's trapped. So we need these people, Representative Hansen, absolutely. And the state's going to step forward when the federal government drops the ball. Mr. Peterson, comment.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And these were federal trappers. You know, but I think it's a really interesting point. It's something that we're working hard on our federal delegation to go after Secretary Vilsack and the USDA. You know, when the federal trappers were actually laid off, I believe in July, and Senator Klobuchar worked very hard to Minnesota's the only state that got funding back from July to the end of January. Even states that had there also have endangered lists. We were able to keep those for another 6 months. That was very helpful through fall calving season. And I think they are aggressively exploring some other ways where the DNR could come up with some money. Maybe we can get some federal dollars to keep that some of those, you know, professional trappers as we're going into figuring out what's the right number for our deer hunting, wolf hunting season.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up, Mr. Peterson, what we do have control of in the state budget, the depredation fund is a general fund obligation, correct?
They nodded yes. Let's see. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming forward. We appreciate it. I'm sorry. Wait. We got a question. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, Mr. Clavin, I'm just curious, and maybe this is for Mr. Bogus, too. I don't know, but is there a way, and could we find a way to, you know, bring about the ability for farmers to actually trap on their own land? Allow farmers to, maybe the DNR would actually train them on how to trap them. It seems to me that you've got a situation. I've been out on trap lines in Canada with friends of mine, and you know, they use a moose carcass. You know, the bait is there, if you will, on the farm, and it would seem to me there'd be an opportunity to the DNR could actually train these farmers to protect their own resources. I know from working with some of the same farmers in the area Mr. Peterson talked about in the past that there are also local people who would be willing to maybe hunt in the perimeter around that farm if the DNR would carve that out, maybe on a farm basis or something, a permitted number of wolves per farm or per square mile or something like that. I don't know that this is something where you necessarily have to go out and expend additional resources to hire people to do this. I'm curious as to whether there's been discussion about some self-sufficiency around this in coordination with the agency.
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, I actually have some experience with the type of thing that you're talking about. When I started my career, for seven years I was an extension wildlife specialist teaching farmers how to trap coyotes. So certainly it can be done for those that have the interest and time, and we do envision under a state program certifying private predator controllers, people that have that expertise that may not be the farmer or the landowner, and they would be available, and in fact the state would pay for wolves taken by those private individuals. Also, we would offer training to landowners that were interested in learning how to hunt or trap wolves. Trapping would be the most effective technique. It takes specialized equipment. Wolves are tougher to trap than coyotes, so it's certainly an option, but even where I did the extension work with farmers, they now have a Wildlife Services coyote control program because a lot of farmers just don't have either the interest or the time to do that. So I think they're going to need some help, whether they need to be full-time employees like the Wildlife Services program. I don't know, but the Wildlife Services program has been very effective, very well received by livestock producers and by people who are concerned about too many wolves being taken unnecessarily. So it's been a good program, but it's also a very costly program, and without the federal funding, I think we need to look at those other options that you're talking about.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Bogus. I would just encourage Mr. Clavin and Mr. Peterson maybe to poll their members and talk to them. I've worked with the Extension Service, too, Mr. Bogus, for about 14 years, and these farmers, their future is at stake with their cattle herd or their sheep flock or whatever they are raising. They work their fences regularly. I don't see why many of these farmers wouldn't be interested in participating in something like this, having worked with hundreds of farmers in my days. As a matter of fact, I would think knowing the characteristics of farmers, they would like to be able to have more control over their own situation. I think we should explore it because as long as farmers rely on government to do it, well, of course, you know, they'll get on the phone. But if we empower them and give them the ability to do it, and give them the training, I'm very certain that they become involved.
Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bogus, I'd like to follow up on Representative Drazkowski's points. I talked to a producer last night in the Lancaster area who had 26 calves that were taken a couple of years ago. One of the issues that they ran into was when the federal trappers came in, the wolf pack was coming onto his property from the WMA that was located next to him. But he relayed to me that the federal trapper was unable to get a permit from the DNR to access the WMA to set traps there. And that would be a concern of mine if we're moving forward, that maybe we need to make some, do some rulemaking there to relax those. You know, this is dramatic. This is a situation in northwest Minnesota that is very extreme. I also talked to a turkey producer in the Roseau area. He's lost 1,000 turkeys in the past few years. It's changed the turkey industry dramatically. Open-range turkey ranching is no longer going to be happening. All turkeys are going to be confined into buildings because producers can't get insurance to protect them. And when a wolf or a pack of wolves come in, they will kill literally hundreds of turkeys in one night. I'm hopeful along Representative Drazkowski's line that we can provide for more opportunities and some more flexibility for the producers to be able to protect their income before the incident happens. I'd like to be able to avoid the problem rather than trying to correct the problem. So as we move forward, that would be my point. Ben? The question about the WMA is what I'm getting at. I'm sorry.
Mr. Boggs.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, maybe we could get some more specifics on that offline, but we do, Wildlife Services operates under a state permit to take wolves because they're a protected species under state law. They also operate under a cooperative agreement, MOU-type document that authorizes them to remove wolves on public land. So I'm not sure what the specifics of this situation are, but we do authorize them to set traps on public land when they have an incident that they're working. So, well, maybe we can delve into the details of that, Mr. Chairman, with I'll commit to talking to Representative Fabian more about that.
And Mr. Boggess, maybe just quickly, you're developing and your map gave us the A and B situation, but now that it's coming under state control, local ranchers, pet owners will have much more flexibility come Friday or Saturday when this takes effect. Maybe you quickly could talk about how a rancher will be able to control their own situation along the lines that Representative Drazkowski talked about. First, maybe how it would be statewide, which would include the A zone, and then if you could talk about how much easier it'll be if you're in the B zone, and maybe you could actually use some of those particular words that are part of your proposal.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask Mr. Stark to explain that for the committee quickly.
Mr. Stark.
Mr. Chair and committee, starting on Friday, under the state plan and under state law, it allows individuals to take a wolf that is an immediate threat to their livestock or pets. An immediate threat is a wolf stalking, attacking, or killing their animal. That could occur anywhere in the state on at any time. In Zone B, it allows a little bit more flexibility for individuals to take a wolf on land that they own, manage, or lease to protect livestock and pets. There does not need to be an immediate threat. And in Zone B, it also allows individuals to contract directly with a certified wolf trapper to take wolves. And they do not have to have a recent livestock depredation. Under state predator control, if a landowner in Zone A has a wolf or an animal that is killed, that's verified by a conservation officer, they can request the state to open a control area, and a private trapper would be allowed to trap in that area up to 60 days. In Zone B, based on a livestock loss in the last 5 years, the livestock producer can request that we open a control area and allow trappers to trap wolves in that area on land within a mile of where the depredation took place. And in those open control areas, the state would pay the trapper $150 per wolf that is caught.
And our feedback, Mr. Stark, from the trappers is that they don't think they would be interested in pursuing that at that low of a fee. That's just limited feedback at this point, but that's a discussion that we'll need to continue to have going forward. Thank you, gentlemen. Next on our list, I have, just to let folks know, I have the Deer Hunters Association, Mr. Johnson. I have the Forested Zone. Trappers are here. And the Humane Society. Again, if there's anyone else that does want to speak, if you could let the page know, because we do want to hear from everybody possible in the public that has an interest in speaking in this. I believe also the Sierra Club has a handout that's in your packet, but we're not aware that they want to come forward. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. My name is Mark Johnson. I'm executive director for the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I should let you all know I had a very good meeting with Mr. Bogus yesterday at DNR and his staff, and really thanked him for quite an extraordinary amount of time, much more than I thought I would get from them, and I appreciated that very much. In a nutshell, to give you a quick overview of what MDHA's concerns are, or the deer hunters, is that first, there's basically boils down to four things. First of all, which we all hope for, is the long-term survival of the wolf in Minnesota and maintained underneath state management. So that's really the first thing. The second thing is the economics of it, and taking a look at the dollars to manage, you know, if you look at hunting and trapping, hunting is the money side. That's the potential where the revenue is to pay for the management and the depredation and the research, or at least a good portion of that. And if you look at the trapping, there's a little bit of revenue there, but primarily that's a scalpel. That's the most effective way to fine-tune that quota or to reach the quotas you want. So we really, unless there's others who don't want hunting and trapping and don't want the wolf hunted, they're willing to come up with $500,000 or $1 million a year to help pay for it, then hunting and trapping are really the economic driver that allows management of the wolf by the state. The third thing that we're concerned about is flexibility, and that's that in the future that there's to manage it successfully and to generate the necessary revenues for the as we go forward. We're really concerned the DNR has that flexibility to improve the season, to increase the season, to create other opportunities as we find out how successful hunters or trappers can be across the state and of course in different areas. And another thing with that flexibility is just utilizing wolf management as another tool in combination with research for, say, prey species management. Moose calves in the northeastern part of the state their survival is quite low. And one of the things that could be and probably is a component of that is the wolf numbers in that area. If there's a way to, in the future, manage population in those areas through hunting or through trapping and coincide that with research of the moose calf survival, that's something that hopefully DNR will have the ability to do. The last thing is the zones. We have an A and a B zone, as you saw on the map from DNR, for wolves. Minnesota has an estimated 3,000 wolves, and I'd like to remind everybody that 3,000 is in the A zone. In the B zone, there are significant numbers of wolves, but they're not counted. Because it's obvious, it's too big of an area. So how do you count the wolves outside of the range or outside of the zone? Our hope would be that if not now, then in the future, that there would be also a potentially split season or something, some other opportunities within that B zone, so that create more revenue, of course, for the management, research, and everything else with the wolf and the depredation, but also to limit the depredations. By reducing the wolf numbers in the B zone, you're going to be seeing reduced depredations on livestock as well. I'm going to be at a meeting tonight with Representative Fabian. Hopefully we'll all have safe drives. We've got about 6 hours plus to drive to Roseau, and there's a public meeting up there. The term pent-up enthusiasm was used before, and that's a very good analogy. I would say it's maybe even underestimated. It'll be really interesting up there. The last statement I'd really like to say is that, this we are at the front end of this. And the most important thing of all is successful state management that will validate future management of the wolf in Minnesota. So hopefully I think that's what we're all here for, and the deer hunters will help to be hopefully a tool towards that.
Questions for Mr. Johnson? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for being here. I made a note here earlier when I heard the term pent-up enthusiasm, and I made a note that said pent-up frustration. Come to Roseau tonight if you MapQuest it. It's 361 miles from St. Paul to Roseau. I want to echo your sentiments about how we should move forward with this, particularly in the B range. I do have, Mr. Bogus, this goes to the deer hunting too. I believe it was a year ago, the DNR radio collared 50 deer in the Grigola-Fortown area. And do you have data on what has happened to that herd? I've heard that a number of those deer were killed in a short time after that by timberwolves. Is that data public? Do you have that information?
Mr. Bogus, if you don't have the information, that would be good for us to get.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, there is a study going on up in the TB zone, what we hope was formerly the TB area, but I don't know those numbers. We'll have to get those for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr.
Were you done, Representative Fabian? Sorry. Yeah, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson. I was listening to your presentation, and I wasn't sure if I was clear on what I heard related to kind of the funds that come from the license fees and the costs that are involved in depredation control. Were you just generally suggesting that the revenue that's generated from licensing, from hunting and trapping, would cover that, or were you specifically suggesting that the licensing revenue should cover the cost involved with conflict?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, thanks for that question. The under management, the state has some responsibility of the wolf, so I would presume that at least part of license fees would be also used from a depredation standpoint. There has been a lot of discussion that potentially some of the depredation monies, be it for payment or whatever, should come from the Department of Ag or somewhere in the agriculture community, and that's an ongoing discussion which I probably don't want to get in the middle of today. But thank you for the question.
Thank you. Representative Deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson. How would the plurality of the deer hunters in your association feel about the start date of the season?
Mr. Johnson, you've never been short of jumping in the middle of controversy.
That's right. That's right.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair, Representative Deal, thanks. We have members across the board. The number one concern of our members, and I've been doing meetings across the state with our chapters over the last month, the number one concern is seeing that state management is initiated and it's done in an open enough fashion so people have opportunity and the money's there. But also enough parameters around it so that state management of the wolf will continue. Number two subject that comes up is we'd sure love to have it during the deer season. And I think that, on a worst-case scenario from our standpoint, I think that in the future we'll see that the hunting aspect is so inefficient that we will be able to have it during the deer season. And, again, that's my hope.
You're not alone in that, Mr.
Fishing, that we will be able to have it during the deer season. And, again, that's my hope.
You're not alone in that, Mr. Johnson. Additional questions, follow-up, Representative Bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson, I didn't quite hear the answer to my question. I specifically asked the beginning of the deer season. Now, I heard what Dr. Meech said about the possibility that we could be so robust in harvest when there's a lot of a pent-up aggression, frustration, anxiety, whatever we want to call it, that we could actually blow by the 400 number on the opening day or opening week. I have a fair amount of experience in hunting wolves where I live and in Canada, and I'm not seeing it. But the answer to the first day of deer season or muzzleloader season, I guess that is my question.
Actually,
Mr. Johnson,
I'm sorry, sir, that I wasn't better in answering that. The we have no problem with opening the first deer season. In fact, I think there are enough, if you have hunters that are forced to, if it's not a party hunting situation, so it's individuals taking the animals, and if you have a 12-hour mandatory registration so that DNR can shut down the season if the quota is drawn near to, you know, they can do that through the media, which Western states have done. And then just looking at Western states like Montana, it took over 15,600 some licenses for them to, in 2009, to take 72 wolves. And that was during their elk season. So those people were going out pretty much as soon as they bought their license, I would presume. There's not 200,000 people in, or hunters in Zone A, in Wolf Zone A, but there are a lot. So you'd have to have the parameters in effect. But, yeah, we'd like to see it then. We'd like to see it.
Additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for coming down and drive safe today on your way to Roseville. Next, we have the Minnesota Forest Zone Trappers Association, if they could come down. And if you could identify yourself for the record, and if you could give a couple-minute presentation, that would allow some time for questions. And I'm not going to even try and pronounce your last name, so I'll leave that up to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. My name is Ken Wainenpaugh, and I'm President of the Minnesota Forest Zone Trappers Association. We accept members from all over the state if our zone, or actually our boundaries, are similar to Zone A. All members living in our zone are voting members, all right? But we do accept members from all over. We do support a hunting and trapping season for the wolf in Minnesota. We have members who are skilled and can take a wolf by trapping. A lot of members, it's a learning process. Not everybody's going to be able to trap one. It's a very smart animal. One of our concerns, of course, is the amount of permits available. And I realize that this is, you know, not set in stone. It says 6,000 licenses. If Mr. Johnson stated that in one state they had 15,000 licenses and they shot, what was it, 75 wolves, 79? Well, you know, people are worried if we have 400,000 deer hunters out there, well, not all of them are going to have wolf hunting licenses. If it's a lottery system, you know, I can't estimate how many wolves are shot, but I hunt deer out of Cook, Minnesota, in Linden Grove area. And I hunt every day. We have a big shack there. We have my sons and a friend are there. We have not seen a wolf from a deer stand for 3 years, and then I was the only one that saw that one wolf 3 years ago. So a wolf is a pretty cunning animal. As soon as you enter the woods, the wolf almost knows it. They smell good. We can hear them at night. Chairman, you mentioned you can hear a pack howling one night. We hear the same thing, but we hear another pack the next night, maybe in a different area. You know, these packs do overlap somewhat. I mean, they have their territories, but they do overlap. So we do support that season. We're also critical of trapping in the critical lynx habitat zone. If you're familiar with that, from Duluth to the Falls, everything east of Highway 53 is designated a critical lynx habitat zone. And that has changed trapping. We have certain trapping rules that we have to abide by to prevent catching a lynx. It affects logging, farming, everything in there. So it's quite a large zone. It's roughly, what, 35,000 square miles. Everything east of 53. And that's why we do not support non-resident trapping. Mr. Dill addressed that. We get an inexperienced trapper and they're going to come up to Minnesota and trap wolves. Well, if they're in the critical lynx habitat zone, they could be catching lynx. And there was a long court case, a long battle, just to allow trapping in this lynx zone in Minnesota. Trapping was going to be shut down. That was the purpose. But there was enough money and enough battling, especially by the Minnesota Trappers Association, the MTA. They were the only group. We're forest zone we established in 2009 after this critical lynx habitat was in. So the MTA was instrumental in fighting for this, to keep trapping in the lynx zone. So that's why we do not support non-resident trapping. It's just too, we don't want inexperienced trappers in that lynx zone. And 90% of the public land in Minnesota is in that zone A. So you can see where non-residents are going to come to, right to zone A. So the timing, as a deer hunter, we support opening day. You know, it's something that's been negotiated. We do not want to eliminate the wolf. I mean, the wolf has a place. We'd like to be able to harvest one. Like I said, not many trappers and not many hunters are going to be able to harvest a wolf. It's just, they're not, they're not, what would you call it, sealable. We have, I have first-hand experience during Fisher and Martin trapping season. I have one Fisher trapping line where I walk on logging roads, set traps. I come across wolves at a couple different bends in this road, and these wolves had mange. Mange is sarcoptic mange. It's a mite that burrows under the skin. And they get this mange basically from contact, too close a contact with other wolves. It's usually in a denning site, and it spreads. So with the amount of wolves there are, the mange is spreading. Mange will kill them. They lose their hair, and they will freeze to death. Mange is spreading. It's in fox. It's in coyotes. Like I said, I've seen firsthand knowledge of that. Mange can spread to humans if you handle this animal. It's called scabies. The little mite burrows under the skin. It only lasts for about 2 weeks of intensive itching. So, you know, after 2 weeks, if you could survive that, you'd be all right. It won't kill you, but it will kill the animal. So the overcrowding, there is mange. And we're concerned about the number of wolves estimated. We'd like to see a more studies done. I realize the difficulty in trying to determine how many wolves there are. But what I've read, the number of wolves has basically stayed the same for the last, I don't know, 10 years. We haven't increased. And our belief is there are more wolves than what's being predicted or counted, but again, I understand the difficulty trying to count a wild wolf in the woods. It's, I don't know what the answer is. But as a trapping organization, we do support the harvest, and we have trappers who are skilled, and a lot of trappers aren't. I mean, it's not easy to catch a wolf. It's not easy to see a wolf. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wayne and Paul. Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, again, I'm interested in your feedback on rules, you know, especially with when we hit a quota or near quota and the season is canceled, you know, what type of notification, you know, duration and types of notification, how reasonable is it, how quickly can you get back out and remove your traps?
Well,
Mr. Wayne and Paul.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The current trapping laws in Minnesota are foothold and snares have to be checked daily. All right, and that's basically what the tools will be used to take a wolf. We do use square body gripping traps, but it's not a wolf tool. So daily checks on traps and snares. And that usually limits the ability of a trapper, depending on how far he has to drive. You know, it's, you can check so many traps, but if you have a 100, 200 mile line, it's a lot of work. So, but to catch a wolf and then have it reported by phone, you know, we can report deer now instead of going to a big game. We call a number. I mean, as soon as I catch that wolf, we can report it, and the traps can be removed. Especially if you can have one wolf, well then, when you catch it, your trap's pulled that day. Of course, you're going to have more than one trap and more than one snare out there. But
Thank you. To that point, Mr. Wayne and Paul, I would imagine not very many of our trappers were around from 1974. What's an average wolf trap cost? So no one probably has them, and technology has changed a little bit with traps and such. So what would a wolf trap, individual wolf?
Well, there are new wolf traps available with the large jaw spread, and they're around $30-$35 right now. There's different brands, Montana brand and Minnesota Trapline products makes a big trap.
Thank you. Representative Thiel.
It would seem that if we had a reporting, phone reporting or internet reporting registration system, we could quickly determine, very quickly, and a person could call in or check the DNR website to see if on this day the season still remains open or if it was closed that day that the posting was made. Secondly is if a trapper took a wolf and he had 50 sets out, he would automatically be required to remove the 50 sets upon finding the wolf because he could no longer trap because he would have fulfilled his license.
Right.
So it would, to some degree, limit the incidental take beyond the original wolf that came on the license. Now, my question is not regarding that. I just had that statement. But regarding, it's been talked about between myself and the department about one of the reasons for having the season begin on or about November 24th is because the pelts would be more in the prime nature. My question to you, Mr. Wayne and Paul, is you being a voracious trapper, which I appreciate, is it going to be a lot of difference between November 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, or 7th, 8th, or 9th, depending on when the deer season starts, because that season date moves around as the calendar changes over the long period of time, and January 24th, and a week window on January 24th, as it will move simultaneously. Right. I mean, is that really something of great concern, not a lot of concern? How could you categorize that?
Thank you, Mr.
Wayne and Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Dill. The wolf, the fur, they call it priming up the under fur against the skin and then the long guard hairs. The wolf is prime in the month of December, all right? Starts early December, depending, you know, it can be mid-December to December. They're really prime. They're worth, as a fur bearer, their value is good. Starting earlier during deer hunting in November 4th, they're not as prime. To sell them as a fur-bearing animal, of course, I would believe the value of the pelt would be less. However, there's two, you know, you can use them as a taxidermy mount to make a wolf rug or a full body mount, and that November fur, that November wolf, would be good for that. I mean, to look at we have a full body mount of a timber wolf in our wildlife display that we carry around the Northland, and I don't know if anybody's seen that, but to judge that wolf as far as primeness, a November wolf would be a perfect wolf rug, a perfect full body mount for display to sell on the fur bearer market. It's not as valuable as a December pelt, but it's still usable. And that brings up another point is a wolf, the skin of a wolf is one thing, you know, it's like skinning a deer, I suppose, you know, we case skin them, you pull the hide up, you don't cut up the belly like a deer. Once that wolf is skinned, the hide has to be fleshed, and that means all the fat and tissue scraped off the hide, and then it takes a special wolf board that they're 8.5 feet long, adjustable wolf board where the fur is put. The wolf hide is put on there, fur in with the skin out for, I don't know, 20, 24 hours till it's dry. Then that fur is turned around. So the fur out, put back on the board for final drying for 7 years, and that's how it's sold, fur out. The fur buyer wants to see that fur. He doesn't want to see that brown skin on the outside. And that's the same with Fisher and Martin and Beaver. For some reason, otter's left fur in, and I think fur buyers get too many surprises that way, but the wolf will be fur out. But it takes specialized tools. A hunter not knowing, shooting a wolf, What do I do now? That's the problem of that shooter. He's going to have that somebody skin it. Taxidermists are available. If he knows a taxidermist, he can call a taxidermist, and the taxidermist will take care of it for him. Yeah. As trapper, we can take care of it ourselves.
Thank Representative you. Dill, follow up.
Well, I just want to say, with regard to novice hunters that might by happenstance take a wolf, I run a moose hunt in Canada, and 30% of my hunters have never even seen a moose. And they believe me, when they shoot the moose, they say, what do we do now? And, I mean, that is really what's going to happen. I mean, you're going to have people that take a wolf. They're going to take it to a taxidermist. They're going to take it to Mr. Wainampaw and say, how do I do this? And it would be an educational thing. And that is exactly what will happen. And I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Wainampaw, for driving way down here and testifying. I appreciate that. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Goldman from the Humane Society. And then if there's ever anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak for or against this issue, if they could identify themselves with the page now, that would be helpful. Welcome, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Howard Goldman, and I'm the Minnesota State Director for the Humane Society of the United States, and I have a little different point of view from what you've heard thus far. We have 170,000 members and supporters in the state, and I was a member of the Wolf DNR Wolf Roundtable in 1998. Our organization opposed the delisting, and we also opposed the public hunt. Wolves, in our judgment, have not recovered. They only occupy about 5% of their historic range. The Humane Society of the United States was the lead party in the lawsuits filed in 2007 and 2009, which successfully challenged the Fish and Wildlife Service delisting rule. We've made no decision at this point if and whether to litigate. We're reviewing the DNR quotas that have been proposed. It's a complex legal issue, and we're also reviewing the science. Nevertheless, I would also like to say that we're very pleased that the department has taken a conservative approach to a wolf hunting season. The DNR's goal is the long-term survival of the wolf, which of course is our goal. And we believe that hunting, sport hunting, trophy hunting, and trapping may undermine that goal. Trapping also raises several other issues. The taking of non-target animals, the prospect of ring off where animals chew their foot off while they're in the trap, severe injuries to trapped animals. And many of you may have seen the article in the Tribune 2 days ago about hunting dogs being accidentally taken in traps in northern Minnesota. Under the new regulations, owners will now be able to shoot a wolf, owners of livestock and domestic animals. That's a significant change from what's been the case while the wolves were federally protected. Compensation is also provided for farmers that have experienced losses, livestock losses, which I know is an important issue in the state, and I did follow up on livestock depredations, followed up with the USDA Wildlife Services. That's the agency that has the responsibility for taking depredating wolves. According to their data, only 91 cows and calves were taken by wolves last year. Those are verified cases of wolf depredation by the USDA Wildlife Services. Also, according to their numbers, there's 165,000 cows in wolf territory. That constitutes less than one-tenth of 1%. And we don't think it constitutes a basis for a wolf season. Fish and Wildlife Service will continue to monitor the population for the next 5 years. We believe that public input is really critical into this process. We know the DNR intends to solicit public input. We'd like to see hearings scheduled all over the state of Minnesota. Moreover, we'd like to see best practices and non-lethal methods become an integral part of the wolf management plan. I know the DNR has focused on those as well, but we think it should be a much more critical part of the plan. Minnesota cares deeply about wolves. and wants them protected.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Thanks for coming in. Question. Appreciate your testimony. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Goldman, I have just one question and maybe two. There's been several articles that I've found recently describing and giving numbers of number of pets that have been killed and dragged off and so forth and eaten by timber wolves. What's your reaction to that, and how should we mitigate those circumstances?
Mr. Goldman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, according to the data for 2011, six dogs, six cases verified where dogs were killed by wolves. At this point in time, under the new regulations that will be in effect on the 27th, landowners, owners of domestic animals, can shoot those wolves. I think that would address that issue. Moreover, I know the department is trying to work on a cooperative agreement with USDA Wildlife Services, again, to come in and take depredating wolves where there's verified complaints.
Representative Fabian.
One more. Thank you. You talked about public meetings. I'm just inviting you up to Roseau this evening.
Well, Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I wish I could come. I'm sorry. I have another meeting.
Mr. Goldman.
But I will come.
Mr. Goldman, I was going to offer you to ride along, but I remember now, Representative Fabian, we're at the end of our week today, so he won't be coming back for 3 or 4 days, so it wouldn't work out. Otherwise, you could have rode along and had an interesting conversation.
I have a 5-bedroom home, Mr. Chair. He's welcome to stay at my house. I'll bring him back.
But Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate the invitation.
Mr. Goldman, thank you. Representative Deal, I believe you had a question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm thinking about the town near where I live that has a relatively, I suspect, unreported pet issue with wolves, because we don't much bother people when we have problems. But in that town is a no-shooting ordinance. So I'm wondering how we would be able to protect our own in a town that has a no-shooting ordinance, even though it's extremely rural. You wouldn't be able to discharge a firearm to take a wolf that was threatening or eating or taking your pets. So I'm wondering how we would get around that, given your plan.
Any comment, Mr. Goldman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, frankly, I would defer to the DNR on that. I really don't have any comments about that or a plan.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Goldman, for coming in. I believe we have a couple more citizens.
Thank you.
Mr. Goldman, Representative Qualm has a question. Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Goldman, you know, you mentioned that the total number of cattle and the small percentage that are taken and documented. When you talk about a farmer that loses a few calves, to that farmer, that could be critical. You have cases of turkeys where dozens or 100 could be lost, and to that farmer individual, that could be critical. And so we can take these huge numbers, but my understanding is that as you stated, you can go a long ways before finding a wolf, and has been discussed. So I think it trivializes to say, oh, in the entire area you only lose a few, because if I lost my pet, if I was a farmer and lost several calves, to me, that's not trivial.
Comment, Mr. Goldman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm certainly not trying to trivialize those losses. And we fully support the compensation program under the Department of Agriculture. Over $100,000 was paid out last year, and we hope that program continues. Moreover, we know from the USDA information which counties have experienced the highest levels of wolf depredation on livestock. And it's Carlton, Kitson, Beltrami, St. Louis, Cass counties have. And in those instances, I would strongly urge the department and USDA Wildlife Services to work with those ranchers to find methods to discourage wolves from taking their livestock. There are several very effective non-lethal methods that have been used in the past, not only in Minnesota and Wisconsin, but out west as well. And those circumstances would certainly justify more action by the department to help protect those, or reduce those losses for those livestock producers.
Thank you. Next we'll hear, I believe it's Mr. Cody. And if I walked on your name, I apologize. We couldn't read the right. I believe. Sir, did you want to testify? I'm sorry. I thought you came forward and wanted to testify. I couldn't read your name. Apologize. If you could come forward and identify yourself for the record, and if you want to just tell us in a quick minute or so what your thoughts are.
Thank you very much, and I apologize for my illegible, undecipherable handwriting. I'm Tom Casey, C-A-S-E-Y. I just have four questions, and I'm a citizen. I don't represent anybody. I'm here to find out answers to questions. First of all, I question why a hunt to begin with when there's testimony here today that there's other ways that are more efficiently take care of problem wolves. What's the management basis for a hunt? Secondly, the second question would be, there is a pent-up demand that likes to see wolves. People like to go out to the woods to see wolves, to hear wolves howl. I would suggest that we investigate the possibility of having a checkoff program like we had on tax forms for the chickadee checkoff, where you have an option as a citizen to contribute to the wolf protection by financing wolf control when it's necessary to protect livestock and farmers. And that would be a way of, and compare that enthusiasm with enthusiasm for deer hunting, deer hunters to use their deer hunting fees to pay for wolf management. So I'd like to see more management options before you take carte blanche the deer hunting's recommendation for financing wolf management. Third question is, this goes back to legislation. I understand that the wolf plan has had a five-year moratorium on the already approved wolf plan. Why was that repealed, that five-year moratorium? In other words, why a hunt and why a hunt now when the moratorium and the wolf plan was already in place? Last question would be trapping. We heard testimony here about unskilled trappers and also the question is the bycatch. The citizens need to hear what are the disadvantages of trapping and its inefficiencies in terms of wolf control versus the other bycatch issues that would arise from that thing. So I'm looking forward for that information to come to play, come before us so that we can understand this better before you move a bill forward. So I'm all ears and look forward to hearing those answers as you move forward.
Well, thank you, Mr. Casey, and you summed up some of the questions that we are asking of the DNR, and that's why we haven't moved this issue farther at this point in time. But I will tell you that we needed to lift the moratorium. It was the right thing to do. We want this trophy animal to be in control of the Minnesota DNR and look at all the different things. We're going to move extremely conservatively. Many, many deer hunters are very upset that we're not moving more aggressively than we are. But this trophy animal deserves to be in northern Minnesota and forever. And we are going to, that's our, Mr. Johnson spoke of it very well from the Deer Hunters Association. The number one concern is that we keep the wolves in Minnesota. And there's nothing cooler than the spine-tingling sound of a pack of wolves way, way out around you as you're walking out in the dark in a full moon and hear them begin to converge on where you're walking out. It's an unbelievable sound, and I hope that we keep that forever. But at the same point, this is an animal that deserves to be in the control of the Minnesota DNR, and we're going to do that, and we're looking at all the different options. We're open to the discussion, and I would encourage you to please be in contact with us, the DNR, as we move forward in this very important step forward. If you have a final comment, that would be fine because we are running over our time.
Yes, Mr. thank you. I'd just like to explain more carefully why a hunt now when the plan was already in place to have a five-year moratorium. In other words, those sounds of the wolves might be heard more frequently if a hunt wasn't established. Since there's no management reason for it, I understand it's politics and there's demand for that, but could somebody explain if it's more than just politics and a pent-up demand to kill wolves? I'd like to hear what that is. Well, so
Mr. Casey, we've heard a lot of discussion in the number of cattle and pets and turkeys and such that have been taken, and we're trying to balance all of that with the most important thing to keep the wolf here in Minnesota where it deserves to be. Thank you. Representative Quam, you wanted to move the minutes?
Yes, I'd like, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from May 4th and May 5th.
Representative Wagenius to the motion of the minutes?
Not to the motion of the minutes, but could I be recognized?
Yes. Afterwards? Yes. All those in favor of the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Thank you. Representative Wagenius, our meeting, next meeting will be on the balance of the DNR game and fish bill, update on the deer population in Minnesota, all four corners of the state, and then other game and fish bills may be added, and that's our intention. And Ms. Zipko, are we on for next Tuesday? Is our next meeting. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask, DNR has presented in the back of the sheet that they didn't go over the revenue that would come in from licenses from hunting. What they didn't present, and I'd like them to bring next time, is the cost to the DNR of managing this whole endeavor that we are embarking on, but not the deprivation issue. That's a separate issue, totally separate. I'm just talking about the management.
Just to manage under the DNR's authority, but also with that, the Ag Department's depredation is a separate issue and one that's currently not being funded.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we're going to get the population on the deer and so forth. Could we also ask DNR to bring in the moose? Can we have that discussion at some point?
Representative Fabian, we could do a thing. We could do the moose at the same time.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. With that, meeting's adjourned.